Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, South Bay Spotlight, on June 21st, 2018. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For additional information, visit their website at academyofforeignlanguages.com, that's all spelled out, or call 310-975-4133.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose, that's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com. And executive producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well this morning, Joe. It was so good to see you last night.
Thank you. It was good to see you. What a great event, isn't that?
Oh, it was fun. It was a Taste of Summer Havana Nights. And it was put on by the Women's Council of Realtors, Women's Council of South Bay Realtors. I'm not sure the exact title, but
the Women's Council of Realtors, South Bay Branch.
Women, South Bay Branch, yes. And it was at the Redondo Beach Hotel down on Harbor Drive, and they have that nice big. It's not a patio. What would you call it? It's an outdoor space. What's the proper term for it? I don't know.
But terribly
it's
convenient. A rooftop deck, maybe.
Rooftop deck, maybe. But it's a fantastic facility, and unfortunately, the darn sun didn't pop out last night. We had that June gloom come in and take us over. But boy, it was fun. They had Cuban music and dancers, and lots of food and vendors, and that was a fun. And boy, we got to see. I'm surprised how many realtors I know. I didn't know I knew that many local realtors, but apparently I do. And it was so good to see Martha Barbie. She was out. I don't know if you had a chance to talk to her.
Oh, no, I didn't talk to her. Directly,
yeah, she was there with her daughter. And got
I
to
did
see
talk
Jenna
to Michelle Brown.
Yes, Michelle Brown was there, yeah. And Patricia Wisman. And, everybody was there. Heidi and Eric and JoJo and Danny. The whole crew was out. So it was a fun evening.
It was. Lisa's Bon Appetit was there. Raging Cajun. Ready Fit Go. We had quite a collection of local food and local providers. It was wonderful.
Yeah, the Boisset.
Great organization.
Was there. One Hope Wine was there. There was bacon bourbon. Did you get to the bacon bourbon?
I just had a sip. Just a taste. Nothing much.
Just a taste. Yeah, King Harbor Brewery was there. Aqua Viable was there. There were a lot of people there. It was like old hometown week, so.
And of
fun
course,
night.
Joanne Gallen was there representing Mix-a-Go-Go.
Mm-hmm. Well, she represents
and,
a lot.
I guess, yeah. She does.
Yeah.
Is she a realtor?
The South Bay. No, she's a title rep or title officer. She's in title. Yeah. And then, of course, the South Bay Business Women's Association, BB and Linda were there, Heidi. Just a ton of people. It was a fun, fun event. Anyway.
Heidi Butzin.
Yes. Anyway, you know, I don't know if you looked at the weekend guide yet. It just came out this morning. But, oh, my goodness. A lot of fun stuff going on this weekend. And we're going to be talking about one of those events this morning.
I am more than excited about the topic that we're going to discuss today. I think it is a question of, if I dare say it, I think it's a question of humanity, and a question of how we treat our fellow men is really a measure of our society here in this little quaint corner of the world, the South Bay. How we deal with this issue really marks us as a place of humanity and compassion. And Jackie, who are our guests today?
Our guests this morning are Angela Wilson and Lisa Daggett Cummings from the South Bay Children's Health Center. Now, Angela Wilson joined SBCHC in June 2017 as the Director of Mental Health Programs. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist with over 15 years of experience in community-based mental health services, including developing and managing programs throughout Los Angeles County. She is trained in several evidence-based practices used at SBCHC. I'm going to mess up those initials all over the place. including trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, managing and adapting practices, seeking safety, and triple P parenting. Angela graduated with her Bachelor of Science from the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater in 1999 and her Master of Arts from National University in 2004. A Midwest native, Angela resides in the South Bay with her husband and young daughter. Now, Lisa Daggett Cummings is a director of development, and her career has been spent almost entirely in the nonprofit arena. She has spent 30 years leading fundraising, marketing, and fund development efforts for emerging nonprofit organizations in the areas of healthcare, education, and social services, leveraging leadership and other key volunteers to achieve fundraising goals. Lisa is a California native, married with three children. She earned her BS in marketing from California State University, Long Beach, and her MBA from Loyola Marymount University. She is also a lecturer teaching nonprofit management at Loyola Marymount University in the Undergraduate College of Business. Now, Joe, this morning we're going to learn about the programs and services available at the South Bay Children's Health Center and the annual Champion for Children's 5K Trail Run Walk happening this Saturday, June 23rd, starting at 8:30 in the morning at Ernie Howlett Park in Rolling Hills Estates. Angela, Lisa, welcome to the program. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Well,
good
we're
morning.
Glad to be here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we're in different offices, and we do really well tag teaming.
Good.
We're a good team.
Yeah.
Good.
Yes.
Good. I want to start off with this general concept that, you know, there are people that argue about climate change. There are people that argue about every kind of conceivable subject, politics and sports and so forth. But there seems to be a consensus around the world, globally, in nearly every country, that early intervention in children's health, you know, what do they say? The child's brain is being developed rapidly from 0 to 5. Well, it's really 0 to 10. Parents know. It's 0 to 14. But early development, 0 to 14, let me tell you. But early development and children's development and intervention is critical for, you know, so many outcomes down the road not to happen, whether that be just, you know, the bad behavior or criminal behavior. All of these things can be pushed off and or eliminated through early intervention. Talk a little bit about that, Angela.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, because that is definitely one of our major focuses, is we call it prevention, early intervention. And it is. It's really getting in there, pretty much before there's problems, before, you know, we like to look at what we call functional impairments, before there start being issues that are impacting kids in school, at home, out in the community. We do a lot of just basic social-emotional learning, and we provide those services, I mean, in the elementary schools, as low as kindergarten. I have a five-year-old, so I've started teaching that stuff, I think, when she was probably two or three. And a lot of it is teaching kind of those basic life skills, you know, how do you deal with frustration? What do you do if someone won't share a toy with you? Just different. How do you identify your feelings? Because feelings and emotions go way beyond happy, sad, mad. You know, there's so many different factors that come into play. And so really getting in there and teaching people to kind of be in tune with their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, teaching them some skills so that as they get older, they're able to deal with that, really does prevent some of those bigger issues from happening. So we definitely, more we can get in there and the more we can partner with places they're already at, you know, the more we can provide stuff at school or at daycares where the kids are already going, and it just becomes part of their everyday thing. I mean, I think that's what I, as a mental health professional, you know, everyone has mental health, you know, and it's important to take care of your mental health just like you take care of your physical health, you know, all of that. So the more you can learn different ways to take care of your mental health, that definitely provides prevention and early intervention.
So it's safe to say,
Lisa,
it's safe to say that Peter Fonda didn't have any early intervention because he's still acting out, right?
I mean, there's definitely some biological factors that may come into play in certain situations. But yes, definitely the more you can learn at an earlier age and that's supported by your family and your environment, that's the most effective.
Yeah.
So, Lisa, when we talk about the South Bay Children's Health Center, are you the right one? Are you the right person to give us a view of where you fit in the system? I mean, are you being referred to by school districts? Are you primarily serving parents? How do your clients come to you?
Well, I think this is a question that both Angela and I can answer, but South Bay Children's Health Center has a rich history that goes back many years in the South Bay. We were founded in 1947, and we have been around for a long time, over 70 years. So we get our clients in a variety of ways. We have three programs. We have a counseling program that is school-based called South Bay Youth Project. We have a mental health program through the Child Guidance Clinic that Angela will talk about a little bit more, and we have a dental program. And our clients come to us in a variety of different ways, but the schools, the local schools and other community organizations that we partnered with is a huge provider of clientele for us.
And is the South Bay Children's Health Center funded in any way by the government, or I know it's a nonprofit, but some nonprofits do receive funding from governmental agencies.
So we are we're pretty diverse in our funding base. Our child guidance program is funded primarily through, well, almost entirely through the Department of Mental Health. We have a contract with them. Our South Bay Youth Project is a combination of private and public funding. We get funding through the Beach Cities Health District, some of the local schools. We have a grant, for example, with the Hermosa Beach Police Department. So that funding is very diverse. And our dental program is almost entirely privately funded. So my job as director of development is to offset the funding that comes in from different places. And, of course, as a team, we want to ensure that our programs and services are available at all times to every child, teen, and young adult that needs it.
This is very diverse and obviously very, very well designed, because obviously, you know, funding, private, public funding, there are ebbs and flows on the public side. There are ebbs and flows on the private side. So what are some of the things that people could know or should know about the South Bay Children's Health Center in terms of initiatives that you want to publicize or new things that are coming up?
So are you talking about programs or are you talking about events?
Well, both, but mostly programs.
Okay. Angela, you want to talk a little bit about,
sure,
about the changes in South Bay Youth Project, and
sure,
then we can also talk about the virtual dental home a little bit.
Sure. I mean, I joined South Bay Children's Health Center about a year ago, and the thing that really drew me to the agency was just kind of how we talked about the diversity that exists and the ability mm-hmm. to work with children and families regardless of insurance, regardless of income status, you know, and to me that's a huge thing because a lot of agencies, you have to ask about insurance, you have to ask about income guidelines, you have to ask about all of those different factors, and they typically have one program. So they can either work with a type of insurance or, you know, they can work with people of a certain income level. And the nice thing about our two programs that we have is that between the Child Guidance Clinic, which is in Torrance, that sees primarily Medi-Cal clients or pretty much exclusively Medi-Cal clients, but mm-hmm. and that's usually in office, but we also can do in-home and school services out of that office. But our South Bay Youth Project is really the one that we are looking to expand because that's the one that gives us the most flexibility. You know, that allows mm-hmm. us to get in there at the school level. Just like Lisa said, we do have many partnerships. I mean, we're in pretty much every single school district in the South Bay area, and we've really been expanding our services. The schools, you know, have definitely noticed that there's a need for services. Our South Bay Youth Project, we only use licensed professionals. So, you know, it's people who are well past their master's, have their license. They're really seasoned clinicians. Almost all of them are private practice therapists. So it's the same level of private practice therapist that we're bringing to the schools to work with the kids. But clearly, the more funding we can get, the more kids we can reach because we are really limited. You know, I mean, pretty much we're one day a week in a school, you know, and most of these schools are big schools. So we have wait lists for our therapists to be able to work with these kids. You know, they rotate out. And what we're able to do in the schools is pretty short-term services. So the more funding that we could get, you know, the more longer-term services we can do, the more triaging we can do to make sure the kids are getting the appropriate services. You know, some kids only need to be seen six times, and they're able to kind of build some of those skills, use them in real life, and go on to have a very productive life. And then there are other kids that maybe due to outside circumstances, family situations, they need more services. And unfortunately, with the way our funding is set up right now, we don't have the ability to do that. So I would love to see that. And I know our my therapist would love to be able to have more flexibility to serve those kids for a longer time. Because I've definitely been out there in the school districts talking to parents, talking to kids. And the thing is, even though most people identify their child might have a mental health need, they don't have the time to see a therapist outside of school because they're involved in all these sports. They're doing tutoring. You know, they're volunteering. They're doing all of these things to get them into these amazing colleges that they don't have the time to do anything else. So the more we can bring to them at school where they are going, they are showing up every day, I think that's really something that we've noticed. I've been doing school-based services for probably the last 10 years, and I've seen a huge growth in it, but there's so much more potential to be able to bring.
Absolutely, and that's really the nice thing about the private funding is that the more funding we can raise, the more money we can raise, the more that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And oral health and mental health are two of the greatest unmet healthcare needs, particularly for low-income and underserved families in the South Bay. And just in the last year, I think since Angela's gotten here, we've seen a huge increase in demand, and we're raising money as fast as we can to catch up with that demand. But, you know, it's
wow.
we try not to say no.
Right.
And it's really hard because with everything going on in the world today, mental health is a huge issue, and everybody needs services. And from my perspective, this is something that I'm very, very passionate about, and every little bit helps. So we're raising money all year round, and again, the more that we can raise, the more services we can provide.
I know that Jackie has brought up multiple times the issue that in all of these cases where we see active shooter scenarios where the shooter is not an adult but a child, that child has been screaming for years.
Yeah.
And people have neighbors and the mailman, and everybody knew that child needed some kind of support, and that child had not received that support, and eventually an eventuality of an active shooter situation occurred. So this is something that I'm not talking about necessarily your clients being in that category, but the fact that services available, resources available, are very important. We can't wait to talk about the event that's coming up, because it's all about more funding and more involvement that you as a public, I'm talking now to the audience, there's going to be an opportunity that you can help the South Bay Children's Health Center and the South Bay Youth Project have more funding, and we're excited to talk about that. Isn't that right, Jackie? We talk about that often.
Yeah.
These kids.
Yeah, yeah.
They just.
It's you know how upset it makes me. Every time I think about it, talk about it, it brings tears to my eyes. And the best example of that was that kid in Florida. You know, he had been arrested so many times. He'd had family services come to their home. There were 50 phone calls to the police. There, you know, and the kids at school afterwards said, "Well, yeah, we kind of knew if anybody was going to do something like that, it would be him." You know, so I'm going to give you guys all the credit for the fact that we haven't had any tragedies like that in our neighborhood. But obviously, they didn't have the services they needed in that part of Florida, you know, it gets me very, very upset. You know, people demonize these kids after the fact, and it's just not fair. It's just not fair.
Yeah. Well, I think the more we can do, and the more kind of thinking outside the box we can do, even when it comes to mental health, you know, maybe the more kids that we'll be able to reach. Because sometimes that traditional going to see a therapist, meeting them in the office once a week, you know, it just doesn't always meet everyone's needs. And I think that's kind of the gap that South Bay Youth Project, you know, and we've been around for 20 some years providing services to the local school districts, but we're providing them in multiple ways. You know, we're doing some groups for, you know, that's open to all the kids at certain schools. We're doing that individual piece if that's what's identified. And then we also do some other creative approaches. We offer what's called a wilderness program that we've been doing out of Redondo Shores, which is their continuation high school, for probably, what, Lisa, like 15 years? I think we've been doing our wilderness program. And it's amazing because this is another non-traditional kind of outside of the box, trying to target these kids who are, you know, at a continuation high school and kind of need that extra little level. There's a lot of substance abuse issues that we also come across while we're working with some of these kids. And our wilderness program picks a group of about 10 kids that are identified. They have to audition for this program. The school staff is who picks the right mix of kids. They participate in 10 weeks of groups with a therapist and also their school counselor. And then they do a day of ropes courses. And then they do 3 days of sleeping out under the stars at Joshua Tree. And I think just that approach of really building kind of that, you know, I think we interviewed one of the kids who had gone this year. And, you know, he said it was completely life-changing. You know, he realized the inner strength that he had, because I think a lot of our kids doubt themselves a lot. They don't have that self-confidence, you know, and so kind of seeing I can do it, and then being built up by your peers instead of torn down by your peers. You know, there's no technology when they go spend 3 days in Joshua Tree and they're all able to survive.
Oh my
you know, they might think they can't, but they do. And I think programs like that, I mean, we've really talked about wanting to bring, like, wilderness program to different, you know, right now we can only offer it at one school district, but we'd love to be able to offer it at more. And I think those are approaches that, you know, that's really trying to kind of meet those kids where they're at. And that's a lot of what we do. You know, we do a lot of, you know, play therapy with the younger kids to try to build rapport, make that connection. Wilderness allows us to really do some creative stuff. And I think that's kind of the message, you know, that we would like to be able to do more and more of those kind of creative approaches to meet those kids where they're at, give them a positive experience in the mental health field so that even if, you know, maybe they you know, get what they can from us, but I think when you can always offer that first positive experience with mental health, if someone needs it further on down the road, they're not afraid to ask for help because they had such a positive experience at one point.
You know,
and I think that's really what we try to do.
I have to ask you because you mentioned that in the school district that you work with, the school administrators will identify the kids they feel your programs would help. When a kid is picked out like that, is there any kind of a stigma attached to that? Or is it, you know, how does that happen? If a kid gets called to the principal's office a couple of times and then they'll like say, wait a minute, this kid could use some direction. Let's put him on this list to do things. Explain how that happens and how do the parents react? You know, who goes to the parents? Yeah, I'd love to hear that process.
I mean, it's really driven through the school counselors. The principals are a part of it, but it's really the school counselors because school counselors, I believe, would love to do more mental health. They just don't have the time to do it because they're dealing with a lot of academic stuff. So for us, you know, and even the wilderness program, it's kids who are self-identifying. They want those services, and then the school is picking which of those ones qualify for the service. But across all the schools that we're in, it's really, I mean, we send information home to the families, letting them know we're there. So if they've always wanted their child to have some type of interaction, the parents can call and say, I would really like someone to talk to my child. Otherwise, it's coming through a counselor. You know, maybe that kid has stopped into the counselor's office, you know, to talk about things. Or maybe, you know, the counselor notices someone crying, you know, in the hallway and says, hey, would you like to talk to someone? And sometimes it is. Sometimes it's kids who are, you know, in the principal's office and they've really tried a lot of different things and they identify that maybe mental health would be a good thing to try. We always require parental consent. You know, that's something that we have to have since we are mental health professionals, which maybe separates us a little bit from school. You know, we take it that extra level because we are mental health professionals. So we never see your child without you knowing what's going on. And the more involvement we can have with the parents, that's always our preference, you know, because we might come up with some great skills that seem to work for your child at school, but if I'm not able to communicate that to the parents and that parent can try to reinforce it at home, that's a really missed opportunity, you know. So we want to know. And sometimes, you know, sometimes parents are doing stuff that works really, really good at home that it would be great if, you know, we knew what was working so that we could also replicate that at school. So definitely, and especially with the young kids, you know, some of these elementary age, I mean, it's really about working with those parents and, you know, finding out what's going on. How's this kid sleeping? How's this kid eating? Have you noticed a change in behavior? Are there any, you know, events that happen that maybe we should know about that are impacting this child? So yes, we want the families involved as much as possible.
You know, I want to talk more about, you mentioned the gaps. There seems to be a lot of gaps that kids are falling through, you know, all over the place, not necessarily here in the South Bay. I want to talk about that some more when we come back. But, Jill, let's do a quick station break because we've been
right.
Laxing that lately.
We have. Okay, here's the station break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show, and we're talking about the South Bay Children's Health Center. Quite a long history here in the South Bay, and an encyclopedic list of services available, and just about any community you live in here in the South Bay, services are going to be available to your children in some way, shape, or form, either voluntary or paid, but at very reduced cost due to public and private funding. So we highly encourage you to research the South Bay Children's Health Center and get involved, South Bay Youth Program or Youth Project, and get involved. And then there's an event coming up that you're going to be especially want to get involved with, the annual Champions for Children 5K Trail Run Walk on Saturday, June 23rd, starting at 8:30 a.m. at Ernie Howlett Park in Rolling Hills Estates. We'll talk more about that. So let's get into that. When we talk about the children that you serve, Angela, what age ranges are we talking about? You mentioned elementary school. Is it, well, what age ranges are we talking about?
I mean, we really go, I mean, we are also in some Head Start, early Head Start programs. So we're talking 3 years old all the way through. You know, sometimes we'll have some of these kids at the continuation schools that might be 19, going on 20. So we really cover the whole range. You know, the bulk of our services is probably kinder through 18, but we do some other specialized services for the really young ones, and then kind of that transitional aged, moving out of high school and then maybe on to college or on to that other next chapter.
Right. I always say, as a parent, even though the state says you're an adult at the age of 21, sometimes they still need help for a little while.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's you know, it's a continuation of parenting. It's a different stage, but it's always wonderful and challenging.
All of us need help at one point or another into adulthood.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean,
absolutely.
Everybody does.
I definitely do.
Well, and I think one of the things they're seeing too is statistically the need for mental health services once kids get into college is really, there's a big increase there too. And so when you talk about prevention, early intervention, you know, the hope is the more that we can do, then there's not that crunch. There's not those kids that get to that age, get away from parents for that first time and really, you know, need some help. I think the one thing that we're seeing that's a positive is I think there's some stigmas for sure that definitely still exist out there. But I think kids these days are a lot more in tune with mental health than maybe their parents are. You know, we've seen a huge increase in asking for our services from kids in the community themselves. You know, some of the local schools, the kids are organizing their own mental health awareness weeks. You know, we had an invitation from a high school student to say, hey, we heard about your agency. Will you come talk to us? So there is a lot more awareness from these kids. You know, I think sometimes we don't always give them the credit that they might deserve, but they're aware of what's going on. And I think some of that is also leading to kind of these increases in, you know, mental health needs. But I think a lot of it is kids are now asking for help where maybe they didn't always before. And so the biggest thing is we have this amazing opportunity to work with these kids who are asking for help, and to try to identify those kids that aren't quite ready to ask for help, but who might be struggling. You know, I always talk to teachers.
What this really sparks in me is the question that we should empower kids to notice other kids that might need help, because they are right there with their peers. They see them every day. They have a different view of them than adults do, and they might see a kid that needs help. So that sounds like a very positive development that kids are saying, well, you know, we know when a classmate is having struggles, and if you come and talk to us as a group, maybe they'll raise their hand and say, I need help, because everyone around them knows they need help. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
It is. We call it, I mean, there's a whole campaign on seizing the awkward is what it's called. You know, when you notice that something's changed in your friend's behavior, you know, how do you kind of address that awkward? And, I mean, I do presentations to staff, teachers, and we're really looking to do it to kids and just ask. You know, asking someone, are you okay? Do you need help? You know, that doesn't make anyone who's not thinking about doing something do something. If anything, that helps someone because then they recognize, hey, somebody's paying attention to me. Someone cares.
Wow. I wanted to ask
about I know several decades ago there was a trend towards putting what was called like problem children on medication. He's ADHD or he's ADD or she's that, and they would just I heard of instances where like a teacher. You know, at a parent-teacher conference says to the parents, your kid has ADD, you should go and have them put on something. It didn't seem like there was a lot of thought put into it. And as with any medication, you know, you got to get the doses right. You got to find the right doses that work for you. And that generally involves a lot of follow-up. You know, it's like there's a lot of detail in there, you know. Maybe nobody's asking if the kid is sleeping right or if he's lost his appetite or he can't focus or, you know, any of those other million symptoms you hear on every pharmaceutical commercial.
Right.
Has that changed? Has the thought process behind that changed now? Or are they backing off from just saying, oh, put him on this or put her on this? Has that changed, Angela?
I mean, I can definitely speak for our agency, and I mean some of the other ones that we work with. I know Department of Mental Health, definitely. I mean, that's, you know, you read all these evidence-based practice models that I'm trained in, and that's what a lot of our therapists in LA County are. And that whole evidence-based practice model comes out of, you know, there are certain diagnoses that are treated really effectively with these different treatment models, and those don't include medication. I mean, they can, but the whole push now is let's teach some skills and see if that does it. You know, it's almost like when you're diagnosed with something and your doctor says, you know, let's help you get on a proper diet and try to lose weight to see if that alleviates the problems instead of jumping right to medication. We're also looking at that with mental health is, you know, talk therapy is very effective, you know, and sometimes there's those cases where they do need medication, but let's exhaust all other options first. And then let's not put you on medication and say you're going to be on it for the rest of your life. You know, sometimes it's just a period, too, of kind of regulating those behaviors. And you are so right about the sleep issue. You know, if kids aren't sleeping, I mean, sleep is one of those things. I know our psychiatrist, you know, if you're not sleeping, that's the number one thing we work on getting you in line with before medication even comes into play, is we need to see what you're like when you're actually sleeping. Because sometimes that sleep deprivation shows up in all these other kind of, you know, wacky ways, you know, and it can impact you so much that, you know, you may end up being diagnosed with something, and it's really more of a sleep issue. It's not even necessarily a mental health issue. There could be reasons you're not sleeping, you're anxious, you can't shut your brain off. But yes, I have seen a huge push, and I mean, I know at least here, you know, we don't refer for medication until you're several months into treatment with seeing a therapist. And even then, we have lots of times that our psychiatrist will say, no, this isn't an appropriate kid for medication, you know. And so I would definitely say there's been a big shift from just hopping right to medication right away. And I think that's a really good thing. You know, we always look for, we call
I'm
it
glad
like
to hear
kind
that.
Of that. Yeah, I mean, I've seen what medication can do to some kids. I mean, I've worked in mental health in LA County for 15 plus years, and I've worked with a lot of kids who are in foster care. They were put in residential treatment, you know, all of that, and I've seen what that can do to a kid. And I think, you know, I love the trend towards, you know, kind of that least restrictive. Let's try the minimum first And if that's
right,
not effective,
yeah,
then we'll move up. But there's so many, you know, different tiers to treatment. And I think that's what starting at that basic level, prevention, early intervention, working with the schools, working with communities. You know, some people really partner with local churches to kind of work with their, you know, community as well. And I think kind of that really basic tier one level that all of us can benefit from is so important. And, you know, that's really what we're trying to bulk up in the South Bay. And I think it's a trend that we're seeing all over Los Angeles County. And I know when I go to conferences and we talk about other places, I am so proud and happy to say that I work in Los Angeles County because we are so far ahead. We really are.
Yeah.
We have a
really?
Long way to go,
yeah,
but we're far ahead.
You know, I just recently experienced this personally. A family member, elderly family member, that moved into a facility for pain management. You know, you get to a certain age and, you know, you can't walk, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it took them a good 6 months to figure out the medication dosage, because the first 6 months there was everything from paranoia, complete
mm-hmm.
total memory loss, terrible pain. I mean, it was... It for 6 months it fluctuated wildly, and
mm-hmm.
then finally they got it right,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's great, you know. So it takes a lot of time.
It takes
time and effort and very watchful eyes. You know, you got to watch for every little thing. So I'm so glad to hear that. I am so glad to hear that. But Joe, let's talk about the event this weekend.
Yes.
Who wants to take that? Lisa, you want to take that?
I'll definitely take that. You know, first of all, I think we see so much going on in the world, and as an individual, we say, well, what can I do? What can I do? Is there something that I can do to make a difference? And the Champions for Children event that we put on every year is a really fun way for kids and families to make a difference just in one day. We're in our fifth year. It is an annual 5K run walk that this year has become a trail run and trail walk up at Ernie Howlett Park. We also have a kids' fun run. The doors open, gates open at 7:30. Well, the opening ceremony is at 7:30. 6:30, people come for registration if they haven't registered yet. The run starts at 8 a.m. The walk starts at 9:15. There's Expo. There are some wonderful sponsors. We have it's all South Bay based. So some of our sponsors are the Chevron Corporation, Torrance Memorial Medical Center, Little Company of Mary, Redondo Oral Surgery. It's just a combination of local business and families and kids, and it's a great opportunity to make a difference just in a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love
Fantastic.
That.
Fantastic. Yes. Now, I want to return to something that I believe one of you mentioned earlier, that, of course, Angela, you're concerned with mental health as the director of mental health programs, but it's also oral health. Can you talk mm-hmm. about how those two things are related and key elements to children's health?
I mean, I know our dental director would say prevention, early intervention on the oral health front is also very important. I mean, we partner, one of the other exciting programs that we've brought recently to South Bay Children's Health Center is there's a teledentistry program that we recently started where, again, we're partnering with early Head Start programs, which are those kids, you know, we're talking, you know, kind of birth to five. And we're actually bringing the dental piece right to them. So the whole point that SBCHC is trying to do is break down those barriers to getting to treatment, be it dental treatment, mental health treatment, all of that. And so teledentistry is now able to take that piece to these kids and reach these kids, you know, before they would probably ever step into a dentist door. You know, sometimes kids don't come in until there's already a problem, and there's a lot of dental decay that we might see with the younger kids. And so by taking it in, you know, teaching good oral health, I know they do lots of presentations to parents, to staff, about how to properly care for, you know, children's teeth. it again, you know, works with them, brings it to them, and they only need to come into our office physically if there's an identified problem. Otherwise, a lot of it is just prevention. You know, they can do cleanings, things like that already there. But it's one of those, I know, having worked with a lot of kids in the foster care system or clients that, you know, may be on Medi-Cal or a little lower income, getting to those services hasn't always been top priority or availability. They don't have the transportation. They don't have the time. And so, like I said, I mean, I know I've seen some really major decay issues, which then can turn into self-esteem issues, which can then lead to some mental health issues. You know, I've worked with many teenagers who are afraid to smile because they don't like their smile, you know, and that really impacts self-esteem. They might start not going to school, so you might have truancy issues. You know, all of these things that kind of combine. So there is a pretty good correlation between good oral care and, you know, mental health as well. Because if we're not working on those issues, you know, right away and preventing them, it can have some very drastic effects for kids.
And I'm going to give you another example. We have, over the last few years, we've started to see more and more children living with special health care needs. Mm-hmm. And in the area of special needs, you may have a child. We work with a lot of kids on the spectrum. And sometimes they deal with extreme anxiety in the dental chair. And by having our mental health area...
I'm sorry, Lisa, are we talking about the autistic spectrum?
Yes.
Autism?
Yes.
Okay.
We have some kids on the spectrum, on the autism spectrum, that are dental patients, for example. And it's challenging for them to be seen in the dental chair because they may be dealing with extreme anxiety. They may be actually afraid of the dentist. And one of the things that we can do as practitioners to help them feel more comfortable is something called desensitization. So, and it's something that Dentical and Medi-Cal doesn't cover. It's something that private funding is, that we need private funding for. And in that case, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to comment. I think Jackie's on that spectrum.
Yeah, I was going to say, I still have anxiety every time I go to the dentist.
Yeah, I think we all do. But this is a way that we're actually able to see the mental health side really work closely with the dental side to help take the kids out of that anxiety, to let them be seen in a dental chair without having to anesthetize them. Angela, do you have any thoughts about that?
I do work very closely with our dental director, and we will talk about certain cases that come up to work with some of that anxiety, and I know they are great. I mean, those desensitization visits, you know, that build up to getting the work accomplished are so amazing. It also is great that, you know, if the office staff at the dentist office identifies a kid that, you know, may be struggling with some mental health issues, they can kind of be that first person as well. I mean, that's the whole point of, like, getting the message out that, you know, it would be great if medical doctors asked certain questions to find out if there's a mental health need. You know, now we have our dentists that are starting to ask some of those questions. And I'm always willing to, you know, go over there if they need me to maybe come and just talk to someone who's there. Because, again, it's all about that positive, you know, first interaction with the mental health professional. Because, I mean, we've all had that where you have a negative experience and you're like, I'm never going back to that. I'm not doing that again. So we want it to be positive, you know, and especially if it comes from a trusted person saying, hey, I would really like you to just talk to this person, you know, give it a try, see how it goes. And then, you know, we can go in there and kind of talk about the different things that we can do. But I think having that warm handoff from someone they already trust goes a really long way. And that's what kind of comes through with the schools. You know, this is someone that they see every day at the school who is saying, you know, I really think it would be great if you would talk to this person. Will you at least give them a chance? you know, and I always tell kids, I'm like, you can fire me tomorrow, that's okay, you know, and I think they like that because it's also that they get to kind of own that. They like having someone to talk to, and I think that's what kind of shines through. At least in my experience, sometimes the people that seem the most closed off and sometimes the people that are the most resistant at first might be the ones that make the biggest gains because they've never had somebody give them that undivided attention and really want to hear about what's going on with them. So I think that's the power of just all of us as a community working together and looking out for each other and helping get people mm-hmm. connected.
You know, Joe, you know the old saying, do what you love, love what you do. You know, Angela, listening to you, I have to ask, how long ago did you decide that this was what you wanted to do? Because you obviously love what you do. We can tell just by listening to you. Was this something that from you were a teenager and said, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to get into this field and help people.
I've always been a talker. I always like to talk to people. I actually started out in education. I was surrounded by an entire family of teachers, grandmas, aunts, mom, dad, everybody, and that's the route I started. And then when I did my student teaching, I realized I don't want an entire classroom full of kids that I need to instruct. I want to talk to them one-on-one and find out what's going on. Why isn't this kid turning in his homework? Why does this kid show up disheveled? What's going on? And I think that's what really guided me on that path. And I've done mm-hmm. lots of in-home work. And I think the thing that really brings it home for me is since I started out in education and then I switched to mental health, being able to bring education and mental health together is what mm-hmm. just really excites me because that's the passion on both fronts. And to see the power of how that can all work together is just really, really exciting.
We are very wow. fortunate to have this organization in the South Bay Children's
yes.
Health Center. They're doing incredible work. And you want to get involved? You want to help out a little bit? They're having an event this Saturday, June 23rd, the annual Champions for Children's 5K Trail Run Walk. It's going to be beautiful. It's in Ernie Halla Park, and everybody should go. Everybody should go. You get out, right. you get a little exercise, you have some fun, you meet people, and you're using your powers for good.
Absolutely, and I want to add a phone number, too. So if people call...
Yes.
would like to call with questions. It is 310-316-1212, and the website is www.sbchc.com/C4CRUN, R-U-N. So sbchc.com, C for C, run, 310-316-1212. Hope to see you there on Saturday.
Right.
SBCHC, right. South Bay Children's Health Center.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, right. in this day and age, all you got to do is Google it, and it'll come up. So
yeah.
that's easy.
Yeah.
And what is the price to register for the run?
Before Saturday, it's $35 for adults, $25 for kids up to 12 years old. For the run or the walk, the kids' fun run is $15. The prices of the run and the walk go up by $5 on race day, but you can register all the way up through Saturday at the park. Friday we're having registration at our site, 410 Camino Real in Redondo Beach, from noon to 6.
All right, Joe, didn't you do this walk last year or the year before? You do a lot of these walks, don't you?
This one, it's been maybe 2 years, I think.
2 years,
I'm not sure.
Joe, I didn't know you did the walk. That's awesome.
I think I did. My wife and I.
I recall seeing you in a T-shirt. I think that's why
yeah.
I knew that. Joe likes to go to all these walks to get the T-shirts.
Well, our T-shirts
are the best.
They're bright red.
Pajama shirts.
Our T-shirts are bright red this year, so they're gorgeous.
I've seen his turkey trot T-shirt.
Gotta have one.
I've seen quite a few of your T-shirts from the walks.
Yes. It all depends if we're available, and of course I haven't been available for Saturdays because of my microgreens LA, farmer's market for some time,
mm-hmm.
and a half. But it's wonderful. What a great organization. Yes, that's one way of looking at it. Now, closing down microgreens LA, I have time now. Saturdays are my own again.
Good. Hope to see you Saturday.
Thank you. Angela, Lisa, what a great organization. How can people get involved beyond just coming to the event on Saturday and in getting participating in the walk run? How can people get involved in South Bay Children's Health Center if they're thinking, this is something I want to do with my life?
Involved from the standpoint of making a difference, or
as a volunteer.
As a volunteer.
And
ahead. They would call us, particularly call me, and we'll talk about what their interests are. We have volunteer opportunities throughout the year, so definitely around events. We always need office volunteers to help us. We're a $2 million agency with a staff that works like crazy, so we're kind of lean and mean. And what I do when we have a volunteer is try to match them to an opportunity that best meets their needs. I have students come in from Loyola Marymount they want to learn to fundraise and to write grants. We need people that can help with social media. Sometimes we have mailings that we need help with. Sometimes on the dental side, we need help putting dental hygiene packets together so that kids in the communities can have access to toothbrushes and toothpaste. So the best way really is to connect with us either on through our website or by telephone. Definitely ask for me. And then we place them from there.
How did you connect with those students that want to learn how to write grants? Because that's something that nonprofits throughout the South Bay really need to connect with. How did you connect with those students?
That's an easy question. I'm an adjunct professor over at Loyola Marymount University, where I got my MBA, and I teach a class in nonprofit management. So I have a chance to meet students there, and Westchester is still part of the South Bay, so I'm lucky in that we have students, and not just business students, but business students. I teach sociology, psychology. The class is open to all majors, so I have a great group of students that often come in and volunteer over the summer. And this year I've got some interest from Marymount University students as well.
Lisa, does your organization work with the Volunteer Center in Torrance? We just learned about them a couple of years ago, that they're kind of a catch-all for nonprofits in the area.
We work really closely with the Volunteer Center. They're actually three blocks away from our Torrance office, so we see them, and they're really focusing on youth mental health crisis. That's a real new thing that they've done. They actually came out, interviewed me to kind of get our perspective on things, along with many other agencies in the area. And yeah, so we definitely partner with the Volunteer Center, and I think you're going to see some really cool stuff coming out of there as well. And I think that's what's really great. You know, there is all this focus on mental health, and people are really seizing the opportunities to try to meet those needs.
I love it. Joe, we got to wrap it up.
We are blessed with all of these riches here in the South Bay, and this is just one more example of why we love to live in the bubble here in the South Bay of Los Angeles. South Bay Children's Health Center, very easy to find. You can Google it, or you can just go to SBCHC, and then especially for the Saturday, just click on events. And you'll find everything. Lisa Daggett Cummings, Angela Wilson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for
having
us.
Thank you.
It's always wonderful having you. We're sure we're going to have you back, and And we're thrilled to talk about these issues because you guys are making a difference in our community. Of course, thank you, Jackie.
Always a
thank
pleasure,
you, Jackie.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.